Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Losers, in other words.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, barreling along we go here on a Wednesday afternoon. A hot and steamy one at that here in the Big Buff. I'm the Bulldog. Mike Shope has the day off today. Joining me right now on the Wester Hotline, NHL draft analyst for thedraftanalyst.com, as well as a contributor to the sporting news. He is Steve Kornianos joining us here. Hi, Steve. Good afternoon. It's Chris here. Mike has the day off. How are you, man?
Good, Chris. What's going on?
How much? I'm wondering, it's a little awkward. We've talked, I think, a time or two before, but for me to ask you how old you are doesn't seem like something that I should do it at the outset here, but I'm wondering if you remember the 99 Stanley Cup Finals at all.
Well, of course I do. Yeah, I'm 45, man.
Oh,
I go back to Mike Foligno and those old school favorites. So
okay.
I'm good.
Good deal, yeah. Well, we're kind of rehashing here 20 years ago. It happens to be my wedding day as well. So, like, I have a weirder story than just where I was watching it, you know, because I went away on my honeymoon without even knowing what had happened. I don't know. What do you have any recollection of watching that night and a reaction to what ended up happening?
Yeah, I was really frustrated because, you know, I'm not a Sabres fan, but I was definitely pulling for the Sabres that series. And, you know, I think that the two previous playoffs, specifically 97 and 98, saw a lot of disputed goals, a lot of series being decided, momentum-changing goals that were called off and vice versa. So when I saw that happening, you know, considering how, you know, close the series was, you know, Dallas is a good team and it was disappointing that the league basically allowed it to happen, and in a way, I guess you could say the Sabres kind of fell on the sword for the rest of the league because of that goal. We saw a lot of changes made in the way that the league reviews things, and but even still to this day, they still have problems. So,
yep.
Definitely a tough pill to swallow, that's for sure.
Right. Well, moving to the present day and really the future, because that's what the draft is about, there's a couple guys that probably will almost certainly play in the league right away, and then, you know, the rest will take anywhere from a year to three or four to sort of hash out what exactly these teams accomplish at the draft in Vancouver starting on Friday night, Steve. Right at the very top, and I know the most recent piece that I saw of yours addresses the question that I think maybe still remains, although it seems like it's tilting pretty heavily in Hughes' favor, but Hughes or Kako at number one. I thought the World Championships made a pretty strong case for Kako to maybe, you know, make this more of a question what New Jersey is going to do at number one overall.
Yeah, I think what that World Championship did, and maybe, you know, a couple of tournaments before that, it made Kako more of a mainstream, you know, figure, not just some random European kid who was doing well in Europe and no one hadn't heard too much about him. Whereas you heard all year long about Jack Hughes. The thing is, though, is that you're looking at two record-setting draft resumes, right, for each player, one in Finland, the other one in America. The thing is, Hughes is a center, though, so I think gives him a little bit of an advantage because he does make everybody around him better. I know it's a cliche that people use a lot, but when you have that type of speed and vision where, you know, you attract opponents like a magnet, it opens up the ice for your teammates. You know, not that Kako doesn't expand the ice, but his team is that, you know, the fact that Hughes is a center, I think he has more of an impact on the game beyond just what's in his own little radius, but beyond that as well. So I think he's got the slightest of edges, but he's still an edge.
Is there almost no chance that Kako will play center in the NHL? Is it too early to know that for sure, Steve?
I don't know. To be honest with you, I look at Elias Pettersson. I mean, we watched him play since he was 16, 15. He was always playing wing. And then he comes to Vancouver and they play him at center and he's probably going to win the Calder Trophy. So I don't think that it'll stop, you know, Kako being a national winger. I don't think it's going to stop any team that drafts him from at least experimenting to play center because he did, in fact, play center this year when he played with CCS in the Finnish league. So we'll see. But to me, he's a natural goal scorer. I think you got to keep him on the wing.
Steve Corianos, NHL draft analyst for thedraftanalyst.com and the Sporting News, is on the West Hur Hotline previewing Friday's round one. And well, maybe we'll get a little deeper than that, too, as we go here on WGR. On Hughes, Steve, like I feel like the only question I've asked anyone about this draft is comparing these two. How about Hughes? Like we tend to view almost anyone at the top of a draft, especially an American player in the draft, to Eichel from 4 years ago now. And we did that with Austin Matthews, and we'll probably continue to do that for maybe as long as Jack Eichel is the elite player on the Sabres that he is. How does Hughes measure up to Matthews, Eichel, even McDavid, if you want?
Well, I mean, in terms of the American play, they all played at the same program, the NTDP, and Hughes broke all their records, and he broke them with about 20 games left on his schedule. So there's a good bet that he's going to be the top-scoring player in that program's history for for the foreseeable future. He's not like Eichel. He's not as big or as powerful as Eichel or Matthews. He's a little bit smaller. He's kind of a cross between Pat Kane and Clayton Keller. Those two play wing, but, of course, Keller played a little bit of center at the same program. And if you talk to Hughes, he said he grew up really idolizing Pat Kane, the way that he handles the puck and his edge work and his skating and his vision, his creativity, things like that. So, he's small. He's on the smaller side, about 5'10", $165, $170. So I think when he does play in the NHL, the size isn't that much of an issue. But the thing that he has that is comparable to McDavid, to me, is the hockey sense, the vision, his ability to spot the open man. He's obviously a phenomenal skater. I mean, Connor is a bigger guy. He's got a more powerful stride, whereas Hughes is a little bit more light on his skates, but he's also a road runner as well. So I think when you watch him play with the puck, the way he dangles and controls the play, he can pivot under pressure, little things like that. It's more of a Pat Kane, Clayton Keller kind of a combination.
Okay. So no question, those two guys, like I said at the very outset here, they're playing in the NHL next year, unless something really radically unforeseen, injury, whatever. Like those guys are playing for probably the Devils and Rangers next year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think this is, like I said, the Q size thing should be an issue because Pat Kane was the same playing height and weight back in 08 when he won the Calder for the Blackhawks. So I don't see it that big of a deal.
Okay. Beyond that, we're hearing a lot that from 3 to 10 is kind of a scramble. That there's everybody's got their rankings. You certainly have yours, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of uniformity there, and that there's comparable talent from maybe 3 to 10 or so. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're looking at probably about 5 to 6 players from one program, the NTDP, and about 4 players from the WHL, 1 defenseman and 3 centers. But it is a center-heavy foot, like top 12. So if you would want to break it down into brackets, you have the top tier, which is, of course, Kako and Hughes. And then that next group, and right after that, you're looking at anywhere from 9 to 11 players, big center icemen, 200-foot centers, playmaking centers. You got that one franchise-type defenseman in Bowen Byram. And then, of course, you got the goal scorer, Cole Caulfield, who's only 5'7", but when you score 72 goals, I don't think that really matters. So
right.
It's going to be – for everyone's opinions are different. I'm leaning more towards some of the NTDP kids because I saw them a lot more than I saw the WHL kids. But I just think also it's a record-setting program. You're looking at, the most ones in your program ever had in the first round, the top 10, was 3 guys. That was back in the 60s or the 70s. This program is going to have possibly 10 guys in the first 2 rounds and maybe 6 in the top 15 alone. It's almost like an Alabama for, the NFL, the way they create talent for that league. So it's going to be pretty historic. But again, it's no one really knows after the first 2 picks where they're going to end up.
Yeah. So you mentioned Caulfield there, and I wonder, even alluded to this with Hughes, although he's not as small as Caulfield, but he's neither a big guy. Despite what happened in the finals, it was weird to me. Like I thought a lot during the playoffs, there was this narrative that, in my opinion, wasn't exactly correct. That, look out, like the big boys are back. Big, hard, heavy hockey is going to win. It's the playoffs, and forget about finesse. And I don't dispute that the Blues did have some heaviness in their game, but I still think the game is heading in the direction of speed and skill. And I think little guys like Caulfield, for example, I think the league is probably as open as they've ever been to not downgrading a player because he's 5'7".
Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, all you have to do is look at the central scouting ranking that they, you know, it's basically a league-wide operation that they put out. And if you look back at, let's say, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, cast maybe like, I don't know, maybe like 10 to 15 players, 5'11 and under. Now, with the last couple of years, you're looking at 25, 30, 40, 50 kids listed under 6 foot, including goalies, which is crazy, considering that it used to be the standard. You have to have a 6'5" goalie in net. So I agree with you. I don't think when you the fact that Alex DeBrincat, you know, second round pick back in 2016, he was people were saying he might have been a byproduct of Connor McDavid and Dylan Strome in the junior program in Erie, and so he slipped in the draft all the way down to the second round. And in his second year in the league, he scored 40 goals. So I think that it's pretty much been proven that it doesn't really matter how tall you are, how strong you are in your skates. It's just if you can bury the puck, you can bury the puck, and no one can do it better than Caulfield, that's for sure.
Do you think the Sabres will have a decision to make on him, i.e., do you think he'll get to 7? And if you were them, would you pounce on him, or do you have a better idea there?
Well, I think he might be there. I really, like I said, I really don't know. Unless, you know, these NHL teams, they keep their information pretty tight to the vest. They don't like to give out information. We have no idea what their draft boards look like. Everything that you hear from outside that room is speculation. So I do think, though, that the Sabres could use a goal-scoring winger. We're still waiting on Alex Nylander to see what he becomes. I want to see how Casey Mittelstadt develops. Is he going to be a wing or is he going to be a center? I think when you're looking at the wing, there's going to be three quality wings in that area that should be available. One is the Russian kid, Podkolzin, who might take a couple years to come to North America, but he's still an elite prospect. You got Caulfield, and then, of course, you got Matthew Boldy, who's a phenomenal 200-foot player. Some people have compared him to Mark Stone and Marian Hossa, which I think is something the Sabres need. They need a 200-foot guy that could also score as well beyond just putting up points in the offensive zone. So one of those three should be around there when the Sabres pick. But then again, I don't know if they're leaning more towards the centers. And, you know, we've got a group of about five or six centers after Hughes that have number one potential in the NHL.
Steve, I'm curious about your process when you're ranking these players. Is Podkolzin penalized because teams are scared that he won't come over for 2 years? Like, does that hurt his ranking, or are you just going on? Like, might he be the third best player in this draft, but he's being held back by the contractual commitments in Russia?
I would never let that impact the way that I rank players. It's basically what they do on the ice is all that matters to me. Obviously, there's information that happens off the ice that I can't control. But at the same time, like, you know, if a kid wants to stay in Russia, listen, the Russian factor is real. We haven't had a Russian picked in the top 10 or the top 5 from a Russian league since Malkin and Ovechkin back in 04. All the Russians taken in the top 5 since then have been import players who played in the Canadian Hockey League and the USHL. So I think that there is a fear because of the fact that the teams don't have the ability to keep tabs on them. They're worried that the Russian team might offer them more money to keep them there. You know, there's a kid in Russia right now, Kirill Kaprizov, a fifth-round pick of Minnesota, clearly one of the best prospects in the world, but he was drafted back in 2015, and the Wild can't get him to come over. So I think that might cause some apprehension on the side of on the part of the NHL GMs picking that early. But from a skill standpoint, the kid is phenomenal. Not only that, he's mean, he's aggressive, he's abrasive, he plays a North American style. So when I do my rankings, if I watch a kid, you know, 15, 20, 30, 40 times, and that is a consistent play in all three zones, and he's excitable and offers that type of dynamism, I'm not going to really dock the kid if he says, and you know, his comments were pretty straightforward. He said, I'm comfortable here in Russia with the training facilities, and I'm under contract. When my contract is up, then I'm going to transfer over. But you know, some teams have paid the price for having that Russian factor. You look at Evgeny Kuznetsov, you look at Vladimir Tarasenko. These are elite NHL players that teams passed on because they were contracted to Russian teams. So, you know, sometimes it's good to be patient.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'd love to know what Jason Botterill would think of that ahead of time. And I guess maybe, you know, if he has a choice to make, if this kid is around there at 7, maybe he won't be, maybe he will be, whether they would be comfortable with the current state of things taking someone who really won't be here for that long. Because, if I'm going to wait 2 years for whoever I pick, or at least a year anyway, then, you know, I don't know. I want the best guy, probably, is what I want to do there, right?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, you want the best talent. You don't want to maybe reactionary draft and draft someone that you think will address a current team need. You want to be able to, you know, I know that everyone wants to get these kids in on the ice as soon as possible and maybe fix problems that they might have at the NHL level. But at the same time, some kids take longer to develop than others. And I don't see a problem with the kid being going to Russia and staying there and playing against older men for a couple of years and coming to America. You know, Pavel Datsyuk did that. I mean, I could go on and on, naming the Russian players that did that. So, but he is a polarizing prospect. You know, his statistics weren't all that great. He bounced around from league to league. It seemed like at the end of the season he was out of gas at the under 18 World Championship. So does that impact where he goes? I only knocked him down from 3 to 5. So, when you look at his overall body of work from August all the way up until now, it's a phenomenal pre-draft resume. And, you know, I think he's going to be a quality NHL player, a really good one.
Steve Kornianos is the draft analyst, at the draft analyst on Twitter, also a contributor with the Sporting News. He's on the Wester Hotline for just a moment or two more here, talking about the NHL draft, which is this weekend in Vancouver. Goaltending, Team USA, speaking of the NTDP here. Spencer Knight, you write, best goalie prospect in over a decade. And it's, we know how it goes in the draft. Goalies kind of just, I don't know, they get downgraded. Teams just don't invest high picks in them. How high do you think Knight could go?
I think there are several teams, and I've received word that several teams have him in the top 10 on their draft boards. It's just a matter of, you know, where that organization feels their needs are, what their goaltending prospect pool looks like. If they feel like he's closer to the NHL, then you look at Philadelphia. They have Carter Hart. He was drafted back in 2016. He's already going to be penciled in probably as the number one starter next year. So I think goalies are getting smaller. They care about quickness. They care about technical know-how. They care about flexibility. And listen, Spencer Knight, this kid, it's almost like he's been designed in a lab. I mean, he's that superior a prospect when it comes to goaltending. But I could see why teams would be apprehensive. Look at the guy that just won the Stanley Cup. He was a third-round pick, Bennington. You know, Pecorino, Henrik Lundqvist, these are seventh-round picks. So, yes, Carey Price and Marc-Andre Fleury were the last two goalies to go really high in the draft, and they're, you know, borderline Hall of Famers. But, you know, it trended the other way the last few years, and it's curious to see. I mean, I could see Knight going as high as inside the top 10, and then again, I could see him slipping to the late first round.
Yeah, there is also, and I'm learning this, my son is a 17-year-old goaltender, so, you know, I don't know what the future is going to hold for him, but what we've been hearing all along through this process, he was drafted in the O last year, and he's going to the USA national camp here in Amherst coming up next week. So I don't know if you go cover that as part of your work, but, you know, if you're in town, let me know.
Sure.
But we've always heard it takes longer. You know, you look at the draft and there are lots of goalies that get picked and it's their second or third year of eligibility. Like, they don't go in their first year. Like, that guy is almost more of a rarity, like Knight, that is going, he's an 0-1 and he's going to get drafted in his first year. Teams seem to wait on goalies because, I don't know, they take longer to develop, whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And plus, the thing is, you could put a goalie in the ECHL and let him marinate there. We've had several goalies recently play in the ECHL and become number ones in the NHL. So if you have no room in the minor leagues, in the AHL level, if they're in Europe marinating there, if they're in college, I mean, they have a lot more flexibility with goalies and they can be patient. The only thing is, we got expansion coming. And so that's going to mean, the Seattle team is going to be dipping into the talent pool for backups. So if a team has a really good backup, they have to worry about him getting drafted in the expansion draft. So a way to basically fight that is to start developing your goalies now and just collect as many as you can.
All right, Steve. And for real, if you happen to be in Amherst next week, I'll be away for the back half of that camp, but I'll be around trying to catch as much of my son as I can. Make sure you hit me up. We'll get together for a coffee or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.